It's Friday, November the 10th, 2017. It is a busy news day today. Of course, we're going to be talking about Judge Roy Moore, who's running for Senate in Alabama. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. We've got several guests that are going to be joining us today. We have Mark Morano, who's going to be talking to us about a serious proposal for a climate dictatorship. That's where these people are coming from. So we're going to talk to Mark Morano about that and other climate issues. Of course, he comes from Climate Depot. Lee Stranahan is going to be joining us to talk about the registering of RT as a foreign agent. This is something that Washington has decided that they need to do. We're going to talk about what effect that's going to have on freedom of speech. And, of course, Russia has said that they will now require all American press outlets to register as foreign agents as well. We're going to have an update on the Bundy trial. Sherry Duvalli is going to be joining us from Las Vegas. She runs Redoubt News, and she's been following those trials very closely. So we have a very interesting, I think you'll find this very interesting, what is happening there. We all need to be aware of what happens when people do something that challenges the authority of the government, even when the government is overstepping its authority. And so we're going to talk about the unfair trial there, because you will not believe what is happening there. And we're going to be joined by an Anglican bishop from Pennsylvania. He's also the co-chair of the Black Leadership Council, and he's going to talk to us about guarding the flock. Everybody is starting to get the understanding as to how to react to this. Of course, the left is coming out and trying to scare people with ideas that you're going to strap a chainsaw as an attachment to the bottom of the AR-15, as if the AR-15 wasn't scary enough for liberals. Yes, now we have to be concerned about people strapping shotguns to the bottom of the AR-15, which would basically make it almost impossible to use, and chainsaws and so forth. But the rational people in the country are starting to say, you know what? We need to make sure that there's some people in soft target areas who are trained to fight back and to defend the people who are there. And that's true whether it's a school or whether it's a church. It's always true of soft targets. You need to have some watchdogs, some sheepdogs there to protect the sheep who are going about peacefully minding their own business. You need to be able to protect them from other people and protect yourself. And so rational people in America are starting to understand that. Let's take a look at some of the news today. We have economic news out of the UK that looks pretty frightening. They're saying it is the most horrific October on record for consumer sales. This comes 2 weeks after retail employment tumbled. They say this is consumer prices are going up 3% in September. They say this suggests a creeping decline in economic and spending confidence amongst consumers. Wage increases continue to be outstripped by higher inflation, and there is now a real anticipation of higher mortgage payments. This underscores how vital it is that we get tax reform passed. Tax reform that is not only broad, but deep. We need to have deep tax cuts, and there need to be tax cuts for everyone. You know, there was a story today, you'll see it on the Drudge Report, some people who are upper middle class said, you know, I don't really feel rich. I don't really know that I want a tax increase. Nobody does. I think taxes are too high. Spending is too high. Spending is what needs to be cut. Don't keep the taxes high for anyone, because as we pointed out before, people spend money. I talked about several times the man who lost his job building yachts because they decided they would punish rich people. We see the TSA is failing most of the tests. We have seen this before. They will not give us the exact figures. But when ABC News asked a TSA official, is this somewhere around 80%? You know, am I higher or lower? Am I getting warmer? You know, because they will not tell us anything. Why won't they tell us anything? Don't we have a right to know if they're doing their job? And the source said, well, you're in the ballpark. Well, they keep it from us because they're failing. Meanwhile, at the Texas church that was site of the deadly massacre, they said they are now going to demolish that site. The pastor said it's his desire to move forward, have it demolished, and perhaps replaced with a prayer garden. It's too difficult for the people to look at the results of that. And stay with us when we come back. We're going to talk about the allegation against Judge Roy Moore, who is running for Senate, had a double-digit lead against his Democrat opponent, and now this allegation from the Washington Post and others. We'll be right back.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Well, it's Friday, November the 10th, 2017. The big news today, and we're going to talk about this in this segment, or the allegation, and I say singular, I almost said the allegations, and we're going to talk about why I think it's just a single allegation. And what is behind this? Is it reasonable? How are we getting these allegations? We want to talk about that, but I want to start out first with a story about President Trump, and I think this tells us something about the mindset of the press that we need to think about, as well as a story about Rand Paul. There was a story that came out on CNN yesterday. Ex-Trump security chief testifies that he rejected a 2013 Russian offer of women for Trump in Moscow. President Trump's longtime confidant, Keith Schiller, privately testified that he rejected the Russian offer to send five women to the then private citizen Trump's hotel room during their 2013 trip to Moscow for the Miss Universe pageant, according to multiple sources from both political parties with direct knowledge of the testimony. Okay, so that's interesting. They've been telling us, you know, this is a guy who he likes pretty women. He has a Miss Universe contest. He goes to Russia. Oh, that's believable that this filthy fiction that comes out of the Democrat Party for millions of dollars they spend to get a British spy to write this. Oh, that's believable, isn't it? Well, no, actually it isn't for the people who knew President Trump. But then CNN comes out and says, well, what a Russian's offer of women for Trump may tell us. So what does CNN conclude from this event? They said Schiller in his testimony said he took the offer as a joke. He said when he told Trump about it and they retired to their rooms for the night, the real estate mogul laughed, he said. They thought it was funny. It's like, how ridiculous to think that I would do something like that. And so CNN said, well, what does this tell us? About Trump, they said, it doesn't tell us much. Really? You were the ones who were pushing the dirty dossier? You were the ones who were pushing the fact that Trump is this guy who is using his power to pressure women and to push them into situations? But it doesn't tell you anything about Trump, right? When you have evidence that pushes against the narrative that they have been feeding everybody about President Trump for a long time, no, they're not interested in that, no. Instead, they'll say, well, it doesn't tell us anything about Trump, but let's look at those Russians because, you know, they're always trying to entrap people. Well, look, everybody knows that that's happening and everybody does. You think the CIA doesn't do that? You think the CIA didn't try to do that with Julian Assange? Whether that happened or not, you don't think that they have honey traps that they put out there? Every person who is a public figure should understand that they are the target of these types of things, especially if they are in politics. And so I think it tells us a great deal about CNN, quite frankly. It doesn't tell us anything new about the Russians or any other government agency, but they try to ignore the fact that it doesn't tell us anything about President Trump. Quite frankly, it really does. And, you know, when we look at what happened with Rand Paul when he got mowed down in his own yard, as he was mowing his yard, he got mowed down by a political neighbor. And I think that's what we're starting to see now. Evidence has come out. Other people have talked about what he said on social media and what he would say to other people. He was a virulent Democrat who absolutely hated Trump. Understand that it was only a few days before this event happened that we were hearing from Rand Paul and others that Rand Paul has spent more time with President Trump than anybody else. So if you got somebody who absolutely hates Trump, as evidence shows this neighbor did, and then you find out that your next door neighbor is the closest senator to him, then that might explain some things, but not to the people on the left. The Daily Bell had an interesting take on a GQ article. The GQ article said, Rand Paul sounds like the worst guy to have as a neighbor. Why? Well, they said, and this is quoting from GQ, Gentleman's Quarterly. They said, Rand Paul is an a-hole neighbor. He bought a house in a neighborhood that has certain rules with regard to lawns, and he decided that he doesn't need to follow those rules because of his belief in property rights. Quote, unquote, they put property rights in quotes. That don't actually exist, according to GQ. This is, at its core, the problem with libertarianism. Libertarians don't want to follow the rules that we as a society have agreed upon. All right, so the Daily Bell says, well, GQ never really bothered to find out whether Rand Paul actually broke any of the rules. As a matter of fact, we got testimony Other people have gone out and interviewed the neighbors, and they said, you know, nothing. All this stuff about it being a neighborhood dispute over the lawns and property lines and everything, that's absolutely nothing. They said, he's lived here for 17 years. Nothing has changed about the property in 17 years. We see them out there, and Rand and his wife are very friendly. They always wave. She's jogging. He's mowing his yard and working in his yard and doing things like that. They're very, very friendly. And this other guy, they say, well, you know, he never talks to anybody, and he so forth. So I don't know. But anyway, they say they never look to see whether they actually broke any rules or what those might be. But they did note, this is bad now here. He composts and he grows pumpkins on his property. And as the Daily Bell said, sounds like he's a pretty big scumbag. It's funny that the major complaints against Paul involve composting. The media could focus on the fact that Paul puts his waste to good use instead of filling landfills. You'd think the left would see that as virtue. No, but he's a jerk because the Neighborhood Association apparently says that you can't compost. Okay, so was it over that? I don't think so. I think the idea that it was over that is a lot of compost. So let's talk about what's going on with Roy Moore. Immediately when these allegations come out, we see the reaction of not only the Democrats, but especially the Republican establishment that does not want Roy Moore in Congress. Mitch McConnell leads establishment Republicans in an effort to push Roy Moore out of the Alabama race. Now, remember, these are allegations that have just surfaced. But based on this, they want him out. Want him out. Remember, these are the same people who called on Donald Trump to get out after other allegations were made that were not proven. The Washington Post released a story, and as this is even Breitbart saying, alleging that Roy Moore initiated a sexual encounter with a 14-year-old girl. That is a serious allegation. And if true, he should be out. However, they also go even on Breitbart. They say, as well as other cases of sexual misconduct. I would say no. These other allegations do not rise to the level of sexual misconduct. And I'll tell you why it is important to look at them, what that tells us about the accusers in Washington Post. Mitch McConnell has said, if these are true, he's got to step aside. So that Jeff Flake, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski even said that she has talked to Luther Strange about becoming a write-in challenger to Judge Roy Moore. Because, see, they don't want the last person they want in Congress and Senate was Judge Roy Moore. And I've got a clip for you which illustrates why the left doesn't want him. Let's run that clip.
Daily. We begin tonight with a purge of the GOP establishment, a crisis of confidence in Mitch McConnell, a weakened president who's now scrubbing his Twitter feed, and the political earthquake in Alabama underneath it all. If you're not familiar with this guy, pull up a chair. Because after knocking off the president, McConnell's preferred establishment candidate in last night's Alabama runoff by nearly 10 points, Roy Moore, where the phrase Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him, could very well be your next U.S. senator. If you don't understand just how freaked out some folks in the GOP and the White House are about what that means, then you don't know Roy Moore. First off, he doesn't appear to believe in the Constitution as it's written.
Our rights don't come from government. They don't come from a Bill of Rights. They come from Almighty God.
Now, that's just a taste of what are very fundamentalist views that have gotten him removed from office.
Yeah, well, that happens to be the Declaration of Independence, which is the basis for the American government. It was the basis under which we declared our independence, declared our right to have our self-government. We said, kings don't have a divine right. Our rights come from God. Each and every person's rights come from God. And then we created the Constitution with the Bill of Rights to protect those. That is why the establishment cannot abide Roy Moore. And so you got people like John McCain saying these allegations are deeply disturbing and disqualifying. See, just the allegations, he says, are disqualifying. He should immediately step aside, and he should allow the people of Alabama to elect a candidate that they can be proud of. Has McCain forgotten that he was accused of betraying fellow POWs? Has he forgotten that what happened in South Carolina when he was up against the Bushes and they put out the information, the smear campaign on him saying he has an illegitimate black baby? Oh, well, I guess he should have just stepped down on the basis of those two allegations. This is very disturbing, and we'll take a look exactly at what is being said when we come back. Welcome back. It's November the 10th, 2017, Friday, And we're going to talk about these allegations against Roy Moore. Very troubling allegation that is coming up. And I want to give him a fair shot. I want you to put these in perspective. Understand where these allegations are coming from. To look at the Washington Post. If you understand, as you look at these people who are on the establishment side in the Republican Party, you got people like Lisa Murkowski saying, I've already talked to Luther Strange, saying he needs to do a write-in candidacy. They would much, much rather have an establishment Democrat than Roy Moore because of what you just heard. Chuck Todd saying he has actually says that we have rights that aren't granted from the government. You know, if the government grants your rights instead of them being something that you possess as a human being, these natural rights, that was something that really, really set off Joe Biden in the Clarence Thomas hearings. He went nuts because Clarence Thomas had talked about natural rights. Those are things that we inherently possess as individual human beings. The Bill of Rights was to protect the natural rights that we already have. If the government grants it to you, it is a privilege. And that's where the establishment wants to go. They're very concerned that Judge Roy Moore is going to shake things up. So you got Lisa Murkowski saying, we need to get Luther Strange on as a write-in candidate. And you got John McCain saying he needs to step down just because of the disturbing nature of these allegations. And then you've got a Fox News host, Jesse Waters, saying if these allegations are true, he needs to do the decent thing and step down. Well, what if it isn't true? What if it is a smear? You know, we've had the Washington Post already caught trying to smear Judge Roy Moore, and they were busted doing it. It was an absolute lie. Remember the financial smear that came out? Remember that financial smear? They accused Judge Moore of not reporting or paying taxes on compensation to which he was entitled but did not receive. This is WND reporting this. The Foundation for Moral Law, which was paying Moore as its president for years at issue, said in a statement that all the transactions and arrangements were reported fully to the IRS. The foundation then charged that the reporters were essentially working on a political hit. This has already happened multiple times in this particular race from the Washington Post, from these same reporters against Judge Roy Moore, from the same Washington Post. And they said this. They said, for the Washington Post to state that Judge Moore secretly collected monies that he never received or that the foundation failed to properly report its indebtedness to the IRS is factually false. They said, furthermore, the reporters responsible for the false and misleading articles on the foundation and Judge Roy Moore have written 20 stories jointly since last year, 17 of which have been direct attacks on our president and on conservative principles. You think that they are not biased? You think that they are clear and objected? They said that the Post article had said that the promised back pay was not reported to the IRS as income, but the foundation's tax filing showed otherwise. 2011-2012 did report the obligation that was owed to Moore, but they had not paid him any money. And as they say, everyone knows that you don't pay taxes on money you didn't receive. Understand? But this is coming from the Washington Post. These are the people who, to celebrate the election of Donald Trump that we had this week, we had a 34-hour broadcast. What did the Washington Post do? They created not one, but two imaginary alternate timelines of history. What if Hillary had won? They did that not once, but twice. They said, what if election day 2016 had gone a little bit differently? What if a freak snowstorm across the Rust Belt had kept rural Trump voters from the polls and on and on and on? And then this first line here tells you why we're so happy that didn't happen. Their imagination on Inauguration Day, President Hillary Clinton takes the oath in a headband and a pantsuit because, hey, it was raining. What does she care what you think anymore? Yeah, she would not care what you think. She wouldn't care what the Constitution said. And then, of course, they go through with a not just one of those, but a second one. And then, of course, we've had a Showtime program in August fantasizing about President Clinton bringing world peace. Okay, so these are highly politicized individuals. 17 out of 20 stories done by these reporters have been attack ads. And one of them has been proven to be a lying smear, the one about the taxes. Again, it was reported that he was owed this money, but he did not receive that money. So there was nothing to that at all. So what is the smear here? I think it is interesting that we've got three women who are now adults. And the Washington Post went back and said, well, you know, when these women were quite a bit younger, one of them, I think, was 18, 17, and 16 years old, Judge Roy Moore asked to openly date them. Right. Today, you have to understand that, I guess, in Washington Post's mind and in much of society, dating means sex. It doesn't mean that to everyone. Certainly not at that time. It doesn't mean that in a lot of communities today. To try to distinguish between what the Washington Post thinks of as a date, a lot of people have talked about courting. You know, there was this old-fashioned idea that was around a couple of decades ago where you would actually get to know somebody before you would marry them. You would talk to them and you would meet with them. And when we look at the pattern of behavior that we see with Judge Roy Moore on these other three women, that's precisely what we see. Does the behavior that they describe sound like somebody who is a pedophile, like a sexual predator, like somebody who is on a power trip? No. He would talk to them. He would read them poetry. He would play guitar. And one of them he actually kissed. And these are women who were 1 or 2 years away from being legal age to get married. And he did marry a much younger woman, and they've been married for decades. And there is nothing wrong with that. You know, I find it interesting that the Washington Post has had absolutely nothing to say about Emmanuel Macron's wife and their relationship. You know, she is about, she's 25 years older than her husband, the French President Macron. Okay, no problem with that. I don't really have a problem with somebody that is 20 years older than somebody else marrying, and it doesn't matter whether it's an older woman marrying a younger man or vice versa. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think we should have a problem with that. However, in her circumstances, it was a bit different because you won't see this report in the Washington Post, but some of the foreign press pointed out that when she was a 40-year-old teacher with 3 children and married, she started having a sexual relationship with this 15-year-old student. Now, in America, that would be something that you would be jailed for. But of course, the Washington Post and the globalist press cannot even bring themselves to criticize her for that. As a matter of fact, the parents are so disturbed and still said that they were disturbed. And it was reported in a book that was written by somebody, Emmanuel Macron, quote, a perfect young man, a hagiography done in France for this individual. And the parents said they were extremely disturbed by this. They said they removed their son from school to move away, and they spoke to the older woman, who he later married, and they asked her not to see their son again until he reached adulthood, but she defiantly told them that she couldn't promise anything. See, in America, we'd put somebody like that in jail. And this is essentially something that the Washington Post never had a problem with. You go back and take a look at all the stuff that the Washington Post has done. Just look at the titles of the articles. You know, Macron wants his wife to have official role, but the French aren't so sure. At first, the French were charmed by Brigitte Macron. The former high school teacher is the way that Washington Post reports it. The former high school teacher, not the former pedophile. And then when they come in and talk about this relationship, they say Trump was criticized for his comments about Macron's wife. Trump later on said, you're in great shape, as a compliment. And they said, that's offensive. It's not offensive that she would seduce a 15-year-old student of hers while she is married with 3 children. That's the double standard of the Washington Post. I don't have time to finish the rest of this. We will, though. Stay with us. We've got an interview coming right up. We'll be right back.
Universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm going to get to the rest of the story about Roy Moore, and we're going to take a look at the serious allegation later on in the program. But we are very fortunate to be able to get Bishop Ned to come on. He's a bishop from Pennsylvania, bishop of St. Albans Anglican Church, co-chair of Black Leadership Group of Project 21. I wanted to talk to him because I found out that he was doing something to protect the people in his church after this shooting. So I want to get his take on that. I want to get his take on the NAACP wanting to remove the Star Spangled Banner as the national anthem and their basis for it. Before we get to Bishop Ned, real quickly, I want to remind you of the sales that we still have in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. This is part of our 34-hour broadcast that we had concluded yesterday evening. Super Male Vitality, 50% off with free shipping. Super Female Vitality, 50% off with free shipping. We also have All Apparel, 50% off and free shipping. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, a great way to get a baseline of the essential vitamins and minerals. 50% off with free shipping. Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, 50% off with free shipping. And Biome Defense, our probiotic formula, they're 50% off with free shipping. There's a lot of other specials that are on our website at InfoWarsStore.com. Please take a look there. That's what keeps us independent, and that's what finances us in this time of censorship. You want to have independent media, and it is also a time of economic censorship as well. So joining us now is Bishop Ned. You can find him on Twitter at Bishop Ned, and that's Ned with two D's. He is not only a bishop of St. Albans Anglican Church, but he is also a Pennsylvania State Constable. So I want to ask him about that as well and what that involves. Thank you for joining us, Bishop Ned.
Thanks so much for having me on this morning.
Before we get to the topic here, tell us a little bit about the Office of Pennsylvania State Constable. What does that involve? Is that a law enforcement office?
Yes, it's a law enforcement office. As a Pennsylvania State Constable, I essentially serve warrants for the court. Constables essentially capture fugitives. We're peace officers. We're the oldest peace officers in the United States, the Pennsylvania State Constable specifically. We're established 1664.
Wow. Wow. And that's great. So you're involved in both law enforcement as well as a bishop in an Anglican church. So give us your take on the Texas shooting. What do you think our response should be? Should we ban guns? Should we defend people in churches? What is your take on this?
Well, I don't think we should ban guns because everyone knows the argument that, right, you know, we ban guns and all the good people will get rid of their guns.
That's
and
right.
Only the bad guys will have them. So, I mean, I just think that's a silly argument. But I think in light of what happened in Texas, I think all churches need to be reconsidering what mm-hmm. they're going to do to protect the safety of their parishioners and congregations going forward. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember after the South Carolina shooting, our parish
right.
had some conversations about, sort of what to do next. Do we need to change anything? Yes or no. But I think certainly after this last most recent event, it's clear that people need to take some extraordinary steps to make sure that the people and the members of their congregations are safe.
Yes, yes. And when you look at that situation in South Carolina, Dylan Roof coming into a prayer meeting, meeting with people in prayer for a while there, and it was a small group, wasn't it? About 10 or 12
right.
people there.
Right.
And I'm sorry?
Yeah, go ahead.
He comes into this group. And it's not like a big formal worship meeting where the entire church is there in the building as it was in Texas. And so, you know, people look at this and it's like, well, you know, is this really like a church meeting or whatever? I mean, it was horrific that somebody would do something like that. But when you've got a large corporate meeting of the church and a, you know, formal ceremony like on Sunday morning or something, that is a large group of people. And it really should start thinking, I think, of how you're going to protect a large group of people who are unarmed, who are not looking around, they're not situationally aware. As you might think that somebody might be. I mean, these are people were trusting him in South Carolina. They were trusting this individual. They were not being suspicious of him. I mean, it was predominantly black, if not all black, and here's a white guy who comes in, but they just accepted him with open arms, and they weren't suspicious of him. You know, when you're walking down the street, as we're trained in concealed carry and so forth, part of that is to teach you to be aware of the situation that you're in. And
right.
so these people had their guard down. He took advantage of that. But now we got a situation where it's a large church where this happened.
Yeah, and again, people need to be concerned. You know, there are lots of large mega churches, scattered throughout the country. And, you know, they have police officers there directing traffic. They've got, you know, armed and unarmed security guards inside. They've got people walking, metal detectors for people to walk through. You know,
really? I didn't know anybody had metal detectors.
And it's cost prohibitive for most churches
yeah.
in America
uh-huh.
to do. And, you know, and regardless, you know, do you really want to have to do that going to church?
Yes.
Not really. But, you know, there,
right.
you know, so the question is, what are you going to do going forward? A bishop is the overseer. He's the protector of the church. You know, that's why the bishops carry a crozier. To defend
mm-hmm.
the sheep and to, you know, protect the sheep from the wolves specifically. So, you
yes.
know, I think, you know, pastors have an obligation to make sure that, you know, they keep their people safe, keep their people
and
safe.
And that means that you have an obligation to protect them you know, not just from the spiritual wolves or the financial wolves, but the people who are going to come in with armed guns. I mean, it's just that simple, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. And, you know, there's strong arguments. And, like, I carry my weapon everywhere I go, except to church on Sunday. I live a half block from my church, and I made the decision that I wasn't going to carry my gun to church. Now I'm reconsidering this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just because it just didn't feel, viscerally, it just didn't feel right to me. But, you know, I'm reconsidering it. And there's a biblical basis for that. I mean, when Solomon's temple was built, First Chronicles somewhere, you know, he set up temple guards to protect the people and to protect the temple. So, you know, it's not without precedence in church history. It's just not, I guess, common.
But, that's right. You know, again, that's right.
You know,
well, as they were rebuilding the wall in Jerusalem, they had a trowel and they had a sword because right. They knew they were likely to be attacked by people. That is the reality that we live in, whether people like it or not. We have to understand that the reality of society here has now changed, and we need to accept it and see it as it is and provide for that to respond to that reality.
Yeah, the paradigm shifted radically. You know, people. Well, not everyone, but there are lots of people and fewer people every year, every day, who value sacred space. You know,
yes.
There has always been a line that you don't cross, mm-hmm. You know, doing certain things in churches, doing certain things in cemeteries. There's always been sacred space. That doesn't exist anymore in the minds of a lot of people.
That's right.
You know, a church is the same as a movie theater, the same as a beer hall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we need to recognize that.
We need to recognize that people do not see life as sacred, and there are, you know, when we see all of these different attacks, we understand that it is not simply a gun issue, because we've seen these attacks use a lot of different implements. People have used axes, they've used cars, they've used knives and swords. So the reality is that there's this, and we can talk about the what's at the core of this, which is the heart of people and different groups and religions or whatever. But the bottom line is that we have to deal with that reality, don't we?
Yeah, it's not about the weapon. It's about what's the individual's heart that makes them want to cause harm.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, you're talking about the spiritual journey that you're going through yourself. I interviewed a man who 24 years ago in South Africa, he was in a church. He just happened to be traveling. It was a church that he didn't normally attend. He always carried a concealed pistol. He had a .38, and it was something that he struggled with because he was a missionary. But he had been physically attacked, and he said, you know what, I have not only a right but a duty to protect myself and other people. And he was the only person armed that day, and with just a .38, he was able to stop four terrorists with fully automatic weapons and grenades. Now, they came in spraying the crowd and throwing grenades, so they killed several people and wounded quite a few. But it was because he fired back. They said, wait a minute. There's somebody here in this church with a gun, and they fled because, you know, the wicked flee when no one is pursuing them. And that was a case of this particular individual. We're going to be right back with Bishop Ned, and we're going to talk about the NAACP trying to ban the Star-Spangled Banner, the California NAACP, and the basis for that. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. David Knight, and we're talking to Bishop Ned, N-E-D-D. You can find him on Twitter. Now that, he is the Bishop of St. Albans Anglican Church. He is also co-chair of the Black Leadership Group, part of Project 21. And he is a Pennsylvania State Constable. As he pointed out, that's one of the oldest law enforcement positions in the country, going back to the founding of Pennsylvania. So we wanted to talk to him in the last segment about how, as both a bishop and a constable, he felt about protecting the flock. And I'll give him a chance to say anything else if he wants to finish up on that. But I also want to talk about what's going on with the California NAACP seeking to remove the Star-Spangled Banner as the national anthem. Bishop Ned, what would you like to do? Anything else that you wanted to say about protecting the flock, or do you want to move on to the California NAACP?
We can move on, but just in short, I mean, pastors need to reconsider how they provide for their safety and their personal protection when they're in places where they're particularly vulnerable, like church.
Yes, yes, exactly. Especially in those situations where you know that people are not going to be looking around them, you make sure that you've got somebody there who is. And I think, you know, we look at the church shooting in South Carolina as well as this church that was meeting in Texas. that was a key thing, that there was, you know, especially in a small group in South Carolina, as I pointed out before, you really aren't thinking in that kind of a setting. You've got your guard down. You're not thinking about threats to you. You know, everybody is just open to other people that way. And that was the saddest thing about that church shooting. But when you're meeting in a corporate group, you need to understand that you are now a target. And we have seen this, and as I pointed out before, Charles Van Vick wrote that book 24 years ago to try to get people who were pastors, who were bishops or whatever, to understand that churches were a target in America. And hopefully, I think that message has gotten through to a lot of people in America. We still have people like Piers Morgan who wants to double down and say that we're mindless idiots if we say that we need to protect each other with firearms. But let's talk about the California NAACP. What are your comments about that? The fact they want to ban the Star Spangled Banner?
I have a love-hate relationship with California. I was born in Washington, D.C., but I spent a few years growing up in Northern California. But, you know, I think it's kind of funny and comical. So, you know, they've got this debate going on right now whether they're going to secede from the union. And it seems to have some momentum building, especially with Governor Brown back at the helm of things out there, which I find interesting. But, you know, to try to come up with new words for the national anthem, I just think it's absurd. And, you know, and I guess if it weren't California, people probably wouldn't even be talking about this, but, you know, I just think it's,
I think the whole thing that's interesting is that they're going to this, Bishop Ned, they're looking at the third stanza. Now, how many times have you ever heard the third stanza? I have never in my life heard the third stanza. Like I said yesterday, by the time you get finished with the first one, your voice is blown out because it's such a difficult song to sing. But you go to the third stanza, and what they appear to have a problem with, and again, the context of the national anthem is talking about a protracted battle and the fact that the Americans had prevailed and they could still see the flag at the end of that battle. And so in the third stanza, they're talking about the havoc of war and battles, confusion, and so forth, and we have now defeated these people and removed them, and they say no refuge could save their the hireling and slave. They're talking about the guys that were attacking them and calling them hirelings and slaves. And they look at that, and I think that's the basis of it. They look at the word slave, and they immediately say, hey, that's the N-word. You know, we need to ban it because of that. But the context was they were talking about people that had been forced into conscripted service to fight against them.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing's just so absurd. I mean, and, you know, it's all part and parcel of what we're seeing going on now. This, you know, there's a broad revisionist history sweep that sort of going over this nation where everyone's trying to rewrite history and literally change the meanings of words and instances that have happened in history. And this is just another one. I'm just curious to see how this plays out. You know, it's obviously got no legs, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, California said, you know, this is part of our national anthem now. Or we're changing the words of the national anthem when it's sung in the state of California. It's just fascinating. It just makes me laugh.
Well, you know, you can choose to, when you honor different people, you can always choose to look at the good side of people or the bad side of people. And there's nobody that's perfect, right? You understand that as a bishop. Everybody is going to have a problem. And we have a problem in our history as well. But they're trying to remove, and this is a Marxist tactic, they're trying to remove all of the cultural and legal and religious base of America. They want to tear everything down and level it just, and taking down statues is just a physical manifestation of what they want to do to society in general so that they can then reconstruct their Marxist utopia. Don't you believe that's the case?
I think you're absolutely right, and I've never heard anyone put it together, put that all together as concisely and as accurately as you did, but that's exactly what's going on in this country.
Yeah, yeah, I think that truly is the case. And they don't see the fact of how offensive this is to other people, people who are in the military, who are looking at the symbol of the flag, and they're not thinking about what those people are seeing in the flag. And I think that was really expressed by the NFL commissioner, who said when President Trump criticized that, to point that out, because a lot of people were feeling that and had been feeling it for quite some time. And when he pointed that out, the NFL commissioner said, "How dare you criticize us and disrespect us?" And that's what everybody was feeling that they were doing to military vets and others and to this nation by disrespecting the flag.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You hit the nail right on the head there. Yeah, it's some of these things just make me laugh, but then also at the same time, you know, it really should be frightening people.
Yes.
What's going on? And again, yes. You know, this revisionist sort of zeal to rewrite and redefine and remake history, you know, it's going to be to all of our peril and detriment. And I don't know how people who don't.
You know, Bishop Ned, you said that you had experience in California and you were also in Washington, D.C. area. I've got another article here that the Washington, D.C. City Council is taking steps towards placing a statue of Marion Barry there. And I looked at that and I thought, why wouldn't they do one to, let's say, Clarence Thomas or maybe to Booker T. Washington or to Frederick Douglass? Why would they pick somebody who has a very spotty past, to say the least, to put a statue up?
Well, I saw the story last night. I'm actually down in D.C. right now. I saw the story last night, and, you know, people were poking fun at it. You know, the city government of Washington, D.C., they can laugh at themselves, and I think that's what this is, honestly.
Yes.
He was an icon in the city for a long time before the crack and a long time after the crack. And it's just, I think it's just an instance of the city government saying, you know, let's put this up, and, you know, they can also laugh at themselves. They know they're going to be the butt of some jokes across the country, but, you know, they're going to.
Well, you know, I think I would look at that situation, I would say, you believe that Marion Barry has done a lot of good things from your perspective, from your political perspective. And so you're willing to overlook the crack cocaine issue. Would you make the same adjustment for, let's say, Thomas Jefferson or George Washington, who happened to own slaves and but did a lot of good things as well? Understand that mixed thing here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, obviously the answer from the D.C. city government to that question would probably be no. But then again, you know, the way the trend is in the United States now, with people wanting to tear down monuments, tear down things like the Bladensburg Cross, even things like Stone Mountain, Georgia, you know, tearing down these monuments. Well, maybe they'll start erecting monuments to Marion Barry and tear down the Jefferson Memorial because of some things that he did that aren't popular 200 years later.
I absolutely agree. You know, when we look at this situation. When we look at the situation, Bishop Ned, the thing that began these protests were issues of police brutality. And I noticed when you ran for constable, you said that you're very concerned about the arbitrary and capricious enforcement of laws. You want to see them equally put out there, and we all do. I think what works against that, would you agree with this, is the fact that we have people like Black Lives Matter who want to make this simply a racial thing rather than trying to bring in white people and say, look, white people are getting affected by police brutality. They're getting shot and killed and beaten, and we need to make sure that we change the rules as to how the police do this, and we all do this together to get it done. I don't think they want to solve that problem. They pick cases that are not clear. They don't talk about the clear-cut cases, and then they try to push people apart by race.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, they're only hurting themselves because, you know, there are lots of people, there are lots of white Americans who would have an affinity with a lot of the points the Black Lives Matter movement makes.
That's right.
The Black Lives Matter movement decides, well, you know what? This is a Black Lives Matter movement. Let's push all these people away and just talk about these marginalizing issues.
That's right. They don't want to get it solved because they say, wait, we're not going to bring in a greater group of people to solve. I mean, you would do that with any political issue. You would try to bring in as many people and make common cause with them. Instead, they try to use this as a wedge to divide people on the basis of race. Thank you so much for joining us again, Bishop Ned with 2 D's. You can find him on Twitter at Bishop Ned, and he's also written a book, The Final Four: A Scriptural Journey Through Advent. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Through the electronic Berlin Wall of disinformation, it's your host, live and uncensored, David Knight.
Welcome back. On this Friday, November 10th, 2017, I'm David Knight. Let's take a look at the news. We've got an interview coming up in the next hour. We've got a couple of interviews. We're going to be talking to Mark Morano of Climate Depot. We'll also be talking to Sherry Duvalle of Redoubt News about the Bundy trial. So stay with us. We've got some amazing interviews coming up. In the news, we see that Trump has declared a new world trade order. I saw that and it's like, oh no, what is this? Well, actually, it's good news. What he's talking about with a new world trade order is he says, we are not going to enter into multilateral trade agreements that tie our hands. In other words, we're going to have a lot of world trade. That's a good thing. He's always been portrayed by the National Review, the Wall Street Journal, and the Never Trumper GOP establishment as being somebody who's going to start a trade war. You know, interestingly enough, they were the ones who were pushing for sanctions against everybody because of their warfare orientation. What Trump was saying is, we want to have a lot of trade. What we do not want to have is some kind of a multinational organization that we have no control over dictating who the winners and the losers are going to be. We're going to negotiate that with each other. And as he is in China, he says, look, we've gotten a really bad deal from you guys, and I don't blame you. You're doing the best you can for your country. I'm going to do the same thing. That's the basis on which we should trade. He's somebody who's worked in the marketplace for a very long time, and he understands, you know, you're doing horse trading here. Each person is trying to get their best deal. And he says, but just understand that, you know, we're going to be pushing this pretty hard to try to get a good deal for the United States instead of having some kind of a world trade organization or having some kind of a trans-Pacific partnership group that is going to dictate which industries and which countries are going to be allowed to thrive and to even survive. That's what we do not want. That is the path to world government. It always begins with economic consolidation, and then it progresses to political consolidation. Meanwhile, one of his nominees has now stalled over gun control remarks, and this came right after the shooting in Texas. This individual, Dean Winslow, was a nominee for Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, and when he went before the Senate panel to talk about health issues, he brought up not only his opposition to the military abortion policy, in other words, stopping abortions being provided by the military, but he also said that he thought that it was insane that civilians can buy assault rifles in the United States. He just volunteered this information. So that was a bit much for even John McCain. So even John McCain said, I don't think we're going to move forward with this guy's nomination hearings. So fortunately, that has now been shut down. And as we look at the necessity of having tax cuts, take a look at this headline from the Washington Post. I don't feel wealthy, says one person. The upper middle class is worried about paying for the tax overhaul. We need to have, as I said before, not only broad-based tax reductions for everyone, from the poor to the rich, we need to have them very deeply as well for us to have a vibrant economy. We look down at what has been happening about Bitcoin. We talked about this last couple of days. I talked to Gerald Celente about this yesterday. Interesting that you see in Zimbabwe, you know, we're talking about how Bitcoin has exploded in prices, now over $7,000, about $7,500. It is double that in Zimbabwe. And that Marxist-ruled country, and of course, over the weekend, we saw that Robert Mugabe, I think he's 93 now, this Marxist dictator that rules there, he just jailed an American journalist who was working there, jailed her because she criticized him on Twitter, he said. But of course, the Twitter account kept going after she went into jail, so she may not even be the one who did those tweets, but he wants to put her in jail for a couple of decades for criticizing him. That's the kind of guy he is. He is also, as a Marxist, trashed the economy, as we see in Venezuela. And a reflection of that is the fact that inflation has hit 100% this year, and you're seeing Bitcoin trading at about $13,000 per coin. You know, Jim Rogers, who is, you'll see him frequently as an investor, he wrote a book I read many years ago called Investment Biker. He traveled the world on his motorcycle. But one of the interesting insights he had was the difference in spread between the official trading rate and the black market price of a currency indicates the corruption of that government. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Friday, November the 10th, 2017. In the next segment, we're going to be talking to Mark Morano of Climate Depot about the latest movements by the environmentalists. Now they want a climate dictatorship. They're getting serious about this stuff, folks. They've talked about using the RICO statute against people who deny their climate religion. If you're talking about science, if you know anything about the scientific method, you don't talk about it in terms of deniers or infidels. Those are the terms you use if you've got some kind of religious belief that's being held. Science has always been about skepticism and show me and prove it and let me see the math and the model. But that's where these people are coming from. So he's going to be joining us in the next segment. And before we get back and finish up with what I wanted to say about Judge Roy Moore, I want to give you the products that are still on sale from our 34-hour broadcast. We have a lot of products that are 50% off with free shipping, and you can still see those if you go to InfoWarsStore.com. Let me read off just the titles of some of these, because these are very popular products, products that in many cases do not need any explanation. You'll recognize them by name, Super Male and Super Female Vitality. That's one of our first products. Those are 50% off with free shipping. So is Biome Defense, our probiotic product. All apparel is 50% off with free shipping. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, a great way to take your baseline vitamins and minerals without swallowing a lot of pills. That's 50% off with free shipping. Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, that is 50% off with free shipping. Super Blue Fluoride-Free Mouthwash, that is 50% off with free shipping. And finally, DNA Force, is after having been out of stock for a while, is now back in stock and 25% off with free shipping. That is a very big dollar savings on that premium product. So take a look at the specials that are there, and we really do appreciate your support. Let's go back to Judge Roy Moore. And just to recap what I was saying, we have the Washington Post, who had just endorsed his opponent. We have the Washington Post that has produced 17, these same writers, 17 of the last 20 stories that they've written have been attack pieces against Trump, against conservatives like Judge Roy Moore. We have the Washington Post that had previously, about a month ago, after Judge Roy Moore won the primary there, they published a fake financial scandal against Judge Roy Moore, saying that this organization that he was president of, they had he'd accumulated a salary and that he had not reported it. Well, it turns out that they did report that he had money coming to him, but he did not receive any of that money. So both he and the organization did exactly the right thing. There was no wrongdoing. But you remember the fury that came out of the mainstream media about all of that stuff? That happened there. So now they're coming back and they're saying that 40 years ago, there was a young lady, and what is alleged that they got down to their underwear, that he took her to, 14-year-old girl, they took her to a to his home. They were stripped down to their underwear, and she rebuffed this, and then he took her back, okay? But that would be something that would be a serious crime. She's 14 years old, and he was, I think, 32. That was 40 years ago. Nothing has been said in the interim about this. He's run for statewide office 4 times, twice for governor, twice for Supreme Court Chief Justice. This was never mentioned. Now, to bolster their case, and that's the reason I brought up the situation with the young women that he had dated, and he wound up marrying somebody that was, 24 years his junior, and they've been married now for several decades, have many children and grandchildren. What was brought up to that, to give that credibility by the Washington Post? And understand, in this environment that we have, where we have heinous sexual relationships and pedophile relationships and sexual assault and harassment and power plays and pedophile attacks, both heterosexual and homosexual, in that environment, everybody's just looking at this and saying, well, here's another one. They know, whether or not this is true, they know that that is going to stick in the public mind. And just as John McCain said, well, this is a heinous accusation. He should resign right now. No. Allegations are not the basis of having people resign. He was alleged to have been involved in a financial scandal by the same group of people. But he should not have resigned then. He deserves to have this examined. And when they look at this and they talk about this pattern of dating young women, I think that that actually works against their narrative. It shows that this is not a guy who has who is a predator, who is working on power politics. He had asked the mother, one of these individuals, who I think was a high school cheerleader at the time, 18, approaching marriageable age. She talked to her mother about it, and she said, well, who is this older guy that wants to go on a date with you? And she said, Roy Moore. And she said, well, I would say that you're the luckiest girl in the world. He was highly respected in the community and always has been. And again, to court someone, and we use that word because dating now has been synonymous, has become synonymous with having sex in so many circles. To court someone is to get to know them. And when they described what happened, that was precisely what was going on. So it did not feed an agenda that showed that this guy was a power politics predator. It showed that he liked younger women, and he married one and has been married to her for many decades. So I think, to me, when I saw that, I thought, you know, it really does look like the Washington Post is reaching. And they were reaching in the sense that we've had a lot of people condemn him. Even one of the individuals said, well, at the time, I didn't think anything about it. And I went over to his house, and, you know, he talked to me, read poetry, played guitar, and so forth and so on. He even kissed me. But she said, now I think it's really creepy that something like that would happen. And it's like, well, you know, that's what the Washington Post wants people to think, that it is now inappropriate. But understand that this year and last year, the Washington Post had no problem with the French President Macron and his wife, who, when she was 40 years old and a high school teacher, began to have a sexual affair with Macron, who was 15 years old. They don't have a problem with that. They just call him his high school teacher, call her his high school teacher. And even though we've got this hagiography that's being written in France, they say, well, the parents were absolutely appalled. They took him out of school. They spoke to her, and she said, well, I can't promise that I won't stop seeing him. She was married. She was 40. He was 15. She had three children. She later left her husband. So when we look at the situation here, and we look at the age difference, there's no problem with somebody having a bigger age difference. But there is a problem if you are a pedophile predator like Macron's wife is. But no criticism whatsoever from the mainstream media and the press. When they talk about it, they put this up as a badge of honor. Here's this story from Australia. She says, when we have breakfast, there's me with my wrinkles, and there he is. He's young when we're sitting at the breakfast table. See, isn't that wonderful that an older woman feels empowered to do that? Empowered to take on a 15-year-old. They have absolutely no criticism of that. So the double standard, to me, is absolutely amazing. When you look at the age difference between Judge Roy Moore and his wife is about the same age difference as between Donald Trump and his third wife. But this is Judge Roy Moore's only wife that is here. There is no allegation of unfaithfulness to his wife. And as we look at the reaction of this, before we look at the reaction of this, let's talk about the accusations of the single accuser. As I said before, if you want to make an allegation against somebody, you want to smear them today in today's political environment, the one thing that you could say that everybody would immediately believe is that it was a sexual assault. That is very easy to understand. And I think that this man, who has otherwise had a blameless life, and I would include these allegations of these people that he was wanting to date that were approaching marriageable age, and the way that he behaved with them, I would say that that is consistent with the character that we've come to believe in public of this man. And if you want to smear a politician today, and remember, as I said before, John McCain said these allegations are enough for him to be removed from office. And yet John McCain himself was smeared the day before the South Carolina campaign. They said he's got an illegitimate black child. He should know better than that. And he does. But also, when we look at what's going on with this, we've seen now a post from somebody else alleging that this woman who is making this allegation now 40 years later, saying that she has in the past accused other pastors and wanting a payoff. It is something that needs to be investigated, not only the character of the Washington Post, which is very suspect, but the character of this woman. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Mark Moreno. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Mark Moreno of ClimateDepot.com and ClimateHustle.com. Mark attends a lot of these climate conferences to give us an insight on what these people are saying, the amazing, outrageous things that they're saying, to give us an insight into what they really want to do, what their ultimate goal is, because we have to understand what their goal is before we can really discern these intermediate steps that are being taken. Now, Mark is in Dusseldorf, Germany. He's at a UN climate conference, And I want him to give us an update as to what he heard there. We've got a prominent environmentalist proposing a climate dictatorship. Thank you for joining us, Mark. Is this a quote that I see in this article, is this something that was just said at the UN climate conference in Dusseldorf?
No, this was actually said in the lead up to the conference here. The actual conference is in Bonn, which is just about 45 minutes from here. I'm in Dusseldorf, actually at an alternative skeptical summit, which we're holding as part of the UN climate summit, to stick it in their eye. And we're filled with scientists here. But the climate dictatorship, to just start with that, that is a sentiment that is very well received here in Germany during this UN climate summit this year. Because we had the former head of the United Nations Climate Conference actually come out, her name is Cristina Figueres, and actually say that she wants a centralized transformation that will make life on planet Earth very different for everyone. And she lauded China's one-party rule. So now we have the Scandinavian academic Jorgen Randers saying that he would like to see a climate dictatorship opposed, because then people couldn't oppose what they think is the agenda in saving the world from runaway climate change, which has nothing to do with climate change, because it's always same solution for regardless of the environmental scare, whether it's overpopulation, whether it's 1970s global cooling, now global warming. They're just using that scare. But they're becoming more and more open about it. And a climate dictatorship is actually his quote that he's actually proud of, because he doesn't like dissent and he doesn't like anyone blocking the agenda, their agenda.
Where are the anti-fascists to protect these literal Nazis in Germany? As you pointed out, it's very popular there. It's like, yeah, let's just dispense with anybody's opinions and let's dispense with the scientific method. Let's just go ahead, you know, Sieg Heil.
All right, two things. Actually, Hans Schulenhuber, who's sadly an advisor to Pope Francis, actually proposed, a German climate advisor, proposed a CO2 budget for every man, woman, and child on the planet. Now, this was, he actually said,
except for people like Prince Charles, who's his patron, and the Pope, they would have a dispensation there that I guess that would be an indulgence, right?
Well, to you know, he actually said from Berlin to Beijing, they would impose this. Now, interesting choice of two cities, Berlin and Beijing, you know, not to bring up Godwin's law here when I'm in Germany. But here's the thing. Actually, this conference of what you would call skeptical scientists and activists in Germany, guess who they are most enamored with and just blown away by and have nothing but endless questions about? President Donald Trump, who in America is labeled some kind of fascist for some kind of reason. I don't understand. The Germans here think he is the ultimate freedom fighter. They are in awe at how he stands up to the United Nations, how he stands up to the European Union. They're in awe how he stands up to the central planners, how he stands up to the media. And I mean, in my talk, I ended up spending an inordinate amount of time just talking about Donald Trump. And they seem to be eating it up here. They're very envious of Americans. The liberty-loving Germans who actually look at the science objectively are jealous of Americans because we have President Trump.
Yeah, and you have to make that distinction. It's not the people who are meeting in the UN climate conference. They're not very happy with President Trump. They would be calling him Hitler and a dictator, as they're calling for a climate dictatorship. But it's the people at this alternative conference.
Yes. And we're actually, this is part of the UN here. We're having a lot of fun. We actually did a gigantic toast, a room full of hundreds of people today, did a toast to the United Nations exiting the UN climate agreement. So they are just, their hope is that other countries follow. Now, going into these conferences, David, they have a lot of pressure. Nicaragua and Syria were just joined on to the UN climate Paris agreement.
Well, that's it. That finishes it, right?
And we're, of course, why don't we now join? We always like to follow whatever Syria does, we should be doing, right? Shouldn't we be jumping at it? If Syria's in, we should be in. How dare we not follow Syria's lead? This is how the media is sort of portraying it, is that even Syria recognizes the seriousness. I'll tell you what's happened. Behind the scenes, Syria was probably paid off. Someone, government officials got huge amounts of money in order to get a cheap PR stunt days before this conference started.
Well, that's the best argument for regime change I've seen in Syria yet, that they would join in with this climate change, Paris climate change. But of course,
Well, real quick, the State Department spokesman, Heather Nauer, actually had a great line. if Syria is so worried about gases in the atmosphere, why are they gassing their own people with sarin gas? They're worried about carbon dioxide, a trace essential gas, which is vital to plants and photosynthesis and greening the planet Earth, but they're not worried about sarin gas. It's the media hypocrisy, the UN hypocrisy. You can't even go down that road. It's so silly.
That's right. And when I saw this, that as those two countries came on, all the articles of President Trump standing in front of a burning world and saying the United States is now the only country that hasn't joined into this Paris climate agreement. And yet, at the same time, we had a UN official say, you know what, this isn't going to get us there. With all the pledges that we've added up from all these people and all the CO2 that they said that they're going to cut, that's only a third of what we think is needed based on our models. And we had said this before, that even the people who believed and man-made climate change said that this wasn't going to make any difference. But what it would make a difference in is it would shut down our economy in favor of China and India.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It has no impact on the climate, but it's a huge impact for the central planners. It's a huge impact to get camel's nose in the tent and start regulating and start ratcheting up regulations every year. It's a huge impact for United Nations bureaucrats to have say over American transportation, airline, our SUVs, our home appliances, our home energy use, our diets, you know, cutting out meat eating, our agricultural practices. They're now saying that, you know, transportation and global warming is going to affect the way our fatal car crashes. Department of Transportation studies getting money for this. It does affect that whole thing. Now, a couple things. James Hansen, the NASA's former lead global warming scientist, who's frankly a bit of a nut, to say that kindly. He's been arrested at least half a dozen times protesting global warming. He's endorsed a book suggesting that ridding the world of industrial civilization is the only solution to climate change. Mm-hmm. He came here to Paris to mock and ridicule the idea that the Paris Agreement, he said the idea that the Paris Agreement could save the planet is a quote hoax. So even the gross climate alarmists, to lack of a better word, laugh and mock at anyone in the UN who claims this is going to have any impact on the treaty, on climate. However, and even studies have shown that if all the countries kept their pledges, you wouldn't even be able to tell the difference in temperature, assuming the UN was right and assuming their models were right 100 years out. But what's interesting is even the UN is now admitting that not only are these countries not keeping their pledges, they're not even close. It's a big joke. But what they're really trying to get is that money. They want to transfer the money. They want it to go through the UN, filter it through, and a little bit will trickle out to the developing world, the corrupt third world dictators. By the way, third world is not a politically correct term. You're supposed to say developing.
All right, we're going to be right back. Stay with us, Mark Moreno, and he's going to give us some more updates as to what's going on with these climate changes. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Not sorry when snowflakes can't handle the truth. It's your host, David Knight.
Trying to make some sense of it all.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Mark Moreno. He is in Dusseldorf, Germany. It's a UN climate conference, but it is an alternative climate conference. People who are skeptics, in other words, looking at this from a scientific standpoint, instead of calling for a climate dictatorship. As one of the individuals at the actual UN climate conference, he's at an alternative climate conference, but the people at the UN actually want a dictatorship. And, you know, Mark, you'd mentioned Schellenhuber before, the guy who wrote, he's a scientific advisor for the Vatican. He wrote, along with a couple other people, the climate encyclical from the Pope. This is a guy who was also patronized by Prince Charles. They've called themselves the Earth League. They want a planetary court. They want a planetary council and so forth. And it was just this last week or so, we had what's at the bottom of this, of course, is they want depopulation. We just had Prince William, son of Prince Charles, come out and say, we have too many people and it's tough for the animals. This is a guy who is having one child after the other, which good for him. Have a lot of kids. I don't see any problem with that. But the hypocrisy of these people and the way that they cover up their authoritarian world government is laid out in this article you got at climatedepot.com. The prominent environmentalist who proposes a climate dictatorship. It's always about the dictatorship. It is always about world government and depopulation for these people, isn't it?
Yes. In fact, Shilin Huber, who, by the way, a Czech physicist, Dr. Lubo's model, said he now understands how the Nazis became in power because of people like Shilin Huber. I mean, this man is all about dictatorial control. He's actually said and suggested, I'll be careful to use my word here, that the carrying capacity of the earth is 1 billion people. So what are we going to do with the remaining billions of people? This is the philosophy he's brought and infected the Vatican and Pope Francis. Although Pope Francis didn't need much infecting, he seemed very open to this kind of central planning, redistribution of wealth from the very beginning as a Jesuit sort of poverty perspective from South America.
Right.
But Shilin Huber and his agent, they're running, they come into these UN conferences. That whole mindset is what moves the UN. They talk about global governance. You mentioned population. Al Gore, and actually in the film Climate Hustle, we have Al Gore saying that Africa's projected to have the most number of people that by mid-century. And we need, quote, fertility management in order to prevent this. So we have a white, wealthy Westerner, Al Gore, complaining that there's going to be too many people of color and that we need some kind of fertility management to stop that. Any other way you slice it, that's, you know, you could call it the R word, racist. But this is what the left gets away with. Al Gore said that at a Bill Gates-sponsored event. No one blinked an eye because he's a good a liberal in good standing. Imagine if Donald Trump had made some suggestion that there were too many people of color in the world. It would have been completely easy. But that's what this agenda is about.
Well, look at what Barack Obama did when he went to Africa. He told him, he says, well, you guys can't all have air conditioning. I mean, the planet would burn up, you know, it'd melt down or whatever. I mean, that was Obama.
Yes, and they'll claim, well, the developing world needs to learn from our mistakes. What mistakes were those? Low infant mortality, long life expectancy, modern hospitals, modern dentistry. Who wants to go to, you know, who wants to have your teeth pulled or cleaned in a hut made of dung? No. What mistakes do we make? Well, our mistakes were allegedly too many emissions, which are now going to cause the planet to be doomed. So we want to stop the developing world from making our mistakes, i.e. enjoying Western prosperity. So what
and, you know, we looked at Mark, and we looked at this hurricane and the people who died in that rest home in Florida because they were out of power and they didn't have any air conditioning. We've seen this happen in Europe with elderly people who can't afford heating because of the drastic and artificial increase in prices there. It's not just a lifestyle issue. This is a life expectancy issue to be able to have cheap, affordable energy. And that's the thing that's really made the difference for the first world, if we put it that way. And it's what the people in the developing world really need.
And they claim, oh, well, don't worry, because solar and wind are going to kick up just around the corner and they're going to take over and we'll have low emission. It's going to be wonderful. We won't need fossil fuels. Less than 1% globally of our energy comes from solar and wind. At my website today, Climb Deep, I have an analysis by the Danish statistician, Bjørn Lomborg, talking about it's less than 1% solar and wind. Even under the optimistic scenarios, despite unbelievable amounts of subsidies, you're talking a few percentage points many decades into the future. That could change, but the idea is they want to ban energy that's proven itself for energy that may not work and that's literally a tiny fraction of our workforce. And they try to say, oh, well, look at all the jobs coming from the solar industry. Well, a huge number of jobs come because they're subsidizing them with government money, but the actual energy produced from solar is non-existent. So you compare that to like coal or natural gas, who may have less jobs, but they actually produce energy. Why do you want inefficient businesses that require tons of employees to produce nothing when other businesses have smaller amounts of employees and produce massive amounts of energy? The whole energy debate gets turned on its head at these UN conferences, and you become into a fantasy world. Jerry Brown's probably going to be attending here. And by the way, Jerry Brown...
Well, that will make it a fantasy world for sure.
He was given his... put in his place when he visited the EU. I was very proud to see that.
Well, that's good. You know, when we look at this pronouncement, and let me just read from this article you got at Climate Depot, the one about the prominent environmentalist proposing a climate dictatorship. I want people to see that article, so I'll give them a tease of what this guy actually said. He said, if people don't want my preferred solution, then people are stupid, shouldn't be allowed to decide their fate, and we should install a climate dictatorship instead. The advantage is that once decisions are made, everything goes very quickly because there's no opposition fighting back. That's the mentality of this. And you point out in your article, Mark, that what is even more staggering than that statement is the fact that the Swedish newspaper who did this interview didn't find that astonishing, that they didn't push back against that attitude.
No, people have come to accept it. As I mentioned, the UN chief praised China. We have a New York Times columnist, Tom Friedman, other activists that regularly praise China because of their one-party rule. They don't have the messiness, the barriers of democracy. This is what they're looking at. And that, this is why in the United States, they're so frustrated because they couldn't ram all that in. This is why Obama bypassed democracy, bypassed the Senate ratification of the UN Paris Agreement, bypassed the legislature when it came to EPA regs, and just imposed them through executive order. Thankfully, Trump has overturned that. But it remains to be seen if Trump is a one-term anomaly or whether these are going to be permanent overturning. And that's what we have to wait and see.
You know, we had a dictatorship, as you point out, with Barack Obama on a number of executive orders. He'd say, well, you know, I can't do that at first. He said, I can't do that because we've got a constitution here. And then after a while, he said, you know what? They haven't done what I like, so I'm just going to do it myself. And these guys always get there. I mean, we had even George W. Bush say, you know, George W. Bush, pretty typical of his. I wish I could just be a dictator and tell people what to do. But he didn't actually do it like Obama did to that extent. And, you know, when we look at this, the Washington Post in this last week, we just had a 34-hour broadcast here at InfoWars to celebrate the revolution of Donald Trump becoming president. But Washington Post, on the other hand, was running multiple articles. They had not one but two different alternate histories. What if Hillary Clinton had won? Well, we know what would have won, don't we? What would have happened, don't we, Mark? We would have had a full-on dictatorship, wouldn't we, with climate and many other issues.
Yeah, I call it the Chinification of America. That's what President Obama did. They lauded China. They loved the idea. So they just bypassed democracy and just started imposing regulations. And this is what their stated goal is. And this is where they go. They call it global governance here in the United Nations speak, where even Al Gore has said the climate bills in the U.S. were the first step to global governance. And the idea is you're going to have a small group of people deciding what's best for the world. I interviewed Václav Klaus, the former Czech president, who grew up under Eastern Bloc communism. He said the greatest threat since the fall of the Berlin Wall and the Eastern Bloc nations and the Soviet Union is what he calls ambitious environmentalism, the whole climate movement. And that is what he sees as the greatest threat, and he couldn't be more right.
You know, they talk about global governance, but they all immediately push back and say, no, not global government, just global governance. It's a distinction without a difference. But thank you so much for joining us, Mark Morano. And again, people can find you at climatedepot.com, Climate Hustle. This is a great article. Breaks down as well the absolute failure of the Paris Climate Agreement, how it would have made absolutely no difference, even according to the environmentalists who believe these failed models, it would not have made any difference, but it would have made a huge difference, as President Trump would say, to our sovereignty and to our economy, because that's what it's ultimately about. First the economy, then the sovereignty. Stay with us when we come back. We're going to have an update on the bunny trial from Las Vegas. Sherry Duvalli will be joining us. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Sherry Duvalli of Readout News. She has been following the Bundy trial, but before that, the trial of other people who were associated with that protest. And they're trying to put these people away. They've been in jail, she points out, since January of 2016. Each person is charged with 10 felony accounts, and each man could be sentenced to more than 100 years in prison. We have under the Constitution a right to gather and to address our grievances to the government. But there are other issues involved here. Something has just come out in this trial, as there's been some movement here in the government's admission that there were snipers there. And that's one of the reasons that we went to cover this, was to find out what was going on and to make sure we didn't have something happen like had happened in Waco. We felt that their lives were in danger, and there was a legitimate reason for people to gather there to protect them, to stop violence from happening. And they did stop the violence from happening. But joining us now is Sherry Duvalli. Thank you so much for joining us, Sherry.
Good morning, David. Thank you for having me.
You've got a series of articles about things that have happened this week. You call it the trial of the century in your article on Redoubt News. Summarizing the week, summarize what has happened for us this week.
Well, we've had some bombshell stuff happen in the courtroom this week. One of the largest things that I have seen come out in any of these trials is that the government has been lying all over the place. I mean, go figure. You never think they would do that. But they've been recording privileged phone calls between attorneys and their clients.
Wow.
That is absolutely huge. That's one of the basic tenets of our judicial system. And
yeah, and this is a troubling thing we're seeing even like in the Paul Manafort situation. We've got a special prosecutor. There is no special prosecutor law that expired in 1999. There's no process for review or for appointment or for oversight. And we've got this guy, Robert Mueller, who compelled the attorney for Paul Manafort to testify against him, said he's going to do it again. And now we have in the Bundy trial, we have the government recording privileged calls between client and attorney, penetrating that to do anything that they can to get these people. They will ignore every basis of our law, won't they?
Yeah, they're making this stuff up as they go, is what it seems like. Wow. They have a whole different set of rules in the federal court system than they do in every other system.
You know, I don't think they have any rules. I think they believe that they're free to do whatever they wish. They make up their mind. They want to come after somebody. And a lot of people say, you know, hey, the reason they didn't continue the special prosecutor thing was because they weren't going after a particular crime. They were going after an individual. And I think that's what we see happening here in the Bundy trial. They're going after these individuals, and they will rig anything that, you know, take things off limits, shut down testimony. But some of the things that you pointed out here is the testimony about shredded documents that were found right after the protest in 2014. Tell us about that.
Yeah, they when the BLM left the compound, the Patriots went in there and looked around, and they found bags of shredded documents. They looked at these little pieces, and they can see some, you know, you'll find a piece with a little bit of writing or something on there. And they could tell that these were official documents. And they, you know, were concerned that these documents could have helped the defense, so they're trying to compel testimony on this. Well, it turns out that the U.S. Attorney's Office, starting with Daniel Bogdan and then moving on to Stephen Myrie, was deeply involved in this entire operation from start to finish. Stephen Myrie actually directed Special Agent Kent Kleeman to investigate the shredded documents and reported directly to Myrie at least weekly. Myrie sent another prosecutor, Nadia Ahmed, with him, which they've been trying to downplay. But she's turned into a fact witness for this entire investigation, but not being questioned on it. They never asked the key questions. Who ordered you to shred the documents? Why are you shredding the documents? Kent Kleeman never bothered to ask those questions during his investigation.
And you report in your article that in the course of looking at this, that he testified that he'd learned of a, quote, hurried shredding event. But any information about this would be privileged. We are not allowed to know anything about this event or the basis of it, who did it, why they did it, or any of the information that was there. Kind of sounds like what we're seeing with Hillary Clinton and the DNC destroying disk drives, deleting emails, and wiping them with bleach bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And that also extends out to the cameras. They had found cameras perched over the road pointed directly at the Bundy house. Now, the government's been denying all along that there were any cameras at all. Now it was proven that there were cameras. And the government, of course, is saying, well, there was only one camera. And they never watched it, they never recorded it, and they took it down every day and put it back up every morning.
And they're also saying that there are no existing tapes of that camera, that it was just being recorded and just went nowhere, right? And does that defy credibility that the government, who is putting surveillance cameras out there trying to get evidence against people doing something wrong, that they would not keep any tapes of that? That is just absolutely absurd.
You know, even the judge found that whole line, you know, those statements were not credible. And this is a judge that has been completely on the government's side every step of the way. And she just does not see it as reasonable. That's why she ordered the delay in the trial and hearings on these issues.
Well, you know, what has come out in terms of looking at these cameras and in terms of saying, as you said, that they said, oh, we only had one camera and, oh, we didn't record anything, so we don't have anything to give to you. She said, let's think about this, didn't she? She said, I'll give you a little bit of time to think about this. In other words, do you guys want to go on the hook for committing perjury? But the other thing that came out of this was the acknowledgement that there were snipers. And I know that there were snipers. When I was there, I had individuals, and unfortunately, we were going to try to set the thing up and take pictures out with the camera, but we got called away because we had to do an interview. We were doing live reports from there, and we had to get back to where we could actually get a signal to do the interview. But I had a guy say, hey, come over here. I've got you can see the snipers out there right now with my my binoculars. Maybe we can get something that can be seen on a camera to record this. So I knew that that was happening there. And they're denying that there were any snipers. But why is that important? It's important because it shows that there was a threat against these people, at least a perceived threat. And that would be the basis for people to come and to support them, which is exactly what was going on.
Absolutely. The government has alleged that Mr. Bundy called people to his home under a bunch of lies.
Yes.
And
trying to create a revolution or whatever. He was saying, hey, look, we even wrote articles at the beginning of the week, got picked up by Drudge. Is this going to become another Waco situation? Let's make sure that this doesn't happen. Let's go find out what's going on. That was the basis of us going out there and taking a look at it. It's the basis of Fox News and others who went out there from CNN and MSNBC. They went out there and reported on this stuff because they thought it was going to turn into a violent confrontation.
Absolutely. And it's all coming true that people are starting to wake up and see that the government is the ones who are lying.
Yeah, the government were the ones who were acting aggressively. Nobody was pointing guns at the government. It was the government who was pointing guns at people. It was the government who was making threats. It was the government who was getting aggressive with people. We saw this over and over again.
Absolutely. They started everything. They continued the problem. And then Daniel Bogden told Dan Love to shut it down because he wants to prosecute everybody. And that's the reason that they left.
And, of course, Dan Love, the one who shall not be named, this guy who's disgraced and dismissed because of criminal activity that he committed, he was the special agent in charge given or taking dictatorial powers, but he is now redacted. No information can be said. Nothing can be said about this guy. He cannot be mentioned. And as you just pointed out, it was the deputy, it was an attorney general, and I'm not sure exactly what his office was. Department of Justice had shut this down.
He was the U.S. attorney for Nevada.
Okay, all right. And he shut this down saying, let's let this go. We'll come back at them in court.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what he did, and he was removed by Trump during the big...
he was? Good.
Yeah, he was one of those, and Stephen Miry is now the acting U.S. attorney. He's the one prosecuting this case.
Well, you know, what I would like to see President Trump do, and we have mentioned this several times, I know Roger Stone has, he has the ear of President Trump from time to time, and Roger Stone and all of us here would like to see justice done. We would like to see a pardon for the Bundy family and for anybody who was accused of going there to stand as essentially a group to stand around them and stand with them to make sure that the government that was using snipers and had snipers pointed all around that area had been attacking people to make sure that the government didn't get violent against people. That's why everyone was there. Thank you so much for joining us, Sherry Duvalli. Stay with us, folks. We're going to have another guest coming up in the next hour. Lee Stranahan is going to talk about the moves against RT, forcing them to register as foreign agents here in the United States. What is going on with that? Of course, I'm sure he'll have something to say about Judge Roy Moore and the scandal that has erupted. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I've got a couple of clips here. We just talked to Sherry Duvalli with RedoubtNews.com. She's been covering the Bundy trial in great detail. She's got a couple of articles that you'd be interested in reading. Government recording privileged phone calls with attorneys. It's not just the Bundys. It's not just Paul Manafort. It's not just President Trump and others. This is a pattern of behavior that stretches across our government. We have now a lawless government. As I pointed out yesterday when we were talking to Ty Clevenger, the individual who is trying to at least get Hillary Clinton and Comey disbarred, Comey for lying under oath, Hillary Clinton for destruction of evidence and violation of national security protocols, and they at least disbar them. and he's trying to get information from them. But what he said was, we have now a radicalized subjectivity. Do they want to follow the laws? No. I mean, you could call it lawless corruption. You could call it radicalized subjectivity. Yes, the subjectivity comes in when the courts make their decisions and shut down laws. But for the most part, what we're seeing here is just lawless corruption within the Justice Department. That's what we're seeing here in the Bundy trial. I've got a couple of clips here from Jason Goodman. He sent this to us, and he was talking to the lawyer for the Bundys after this trial. This underscores some of the stuff we were just talking to Sherry Duvalli about from Readout News. I want you to hear what he said about today we learned there were snipers. Here's the first part of this.
So today, or yesterday for the first time, we learned that, in fact, there were FBI snipers surrounding the ranch. There were surveilling the ranch, and there were cameras that were located around the residence.
Crank up the audio a little bit.
Our clients were in fear for their own safety and reached out to other people to witness and to protest what they heard as a government overreach was, in fact, consistent with the facts and what actually happened.
Okay, hang on a second. He's standing a little bit of a distance. We've got another clip where he's a little bit closer. I'll stop this right now. What you heard him say, maybe, if you could hear that, was he said, today what we learned was that there really were snipers, that people were coming there because they were concerned about the safety of these individuals, that the government was getting aggressive with that. Now, I want to play the next clip for you where he says, don't you think it's not even credible that they say that there was a video camera there that's now come out, as Sherry was talking about, that came out in court that, yes, they not only did they have snipers there, but they had surveillance cameras all around the place. But, of course, even though they were trying to get something on the Bundys or the people who were there, and they didn't because they weren't doing anything criminal, you have a right to peacefully assemble. You have a right to stand with other individuals when you think that the government is going to get aggressive and start to harm people, and we'd already seen them do that. It's basically what we saw in Catalonia. Farmers showed up with their tractors and said, we're not going to let these jackbooted thugs from Madrid come down here and shut down the election, so we're going to stand together. And people did stand together. They did it peacefully. And what was happening, what I saw, in spite of the spin of the government, I saw people peacefully standing with the Bundys and refusing to back down and to say that, well, shoot us if you want to shoot us. They didn't pull their guns out of the holster of the people that I was standing with. They basically walked to the wall as the government was threatening to shoot people over this situation. But here's this other clip where he's talking about the video camera that was there. They now admit, but now say that no recordings exist. Here's that clip.
Don't you find it slightly less than credible that in 2014 a video camera's not going to be recorded, that it's just sending images into the abyss?
You know, so here's
this is the lawyer for the Bundy speaking.
Normal jury instructions that jurors receive are you're supposed to use your common sense. And the judge yesterday basically said, you know what, it just doesn't seem reasonable or logical to me that the government would spend so much time and effort and then not record it. And so that's why we had the hearing today. I mean, ironically, the attorney, you know, the U.S. attorney stood up and said, no, we didn't record it. And not that I'm not aware of anybody taking notes. I mean, does that seem consistent with the facts? I mean, but what she did say is she says, well, I'm going to have to take your word at it for right now, but I'm ordering you to disclose any evidence that you have of any type of recording or any type of notes or any type of information that would lead to additional discovery regarding that.
Again, the judge, who is very biased against the defendants, even she said, I'm going to give you a little bit of time to think about this. Whether you want to get involved in perjury and obstruction of justice. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In the next segment, we're going to be talking to Lee Stranahan. I'm sure he's going to want to talk about what happened with RT. We now have this Russian narrative expanding to the extent that the American government is treating RT as a spy agency. Look, RT is no more biased than the Washington Post or the CNN. When they say things about America, basically RT tells us the truth. They don't necessarily tell us the truth about Putin and what's happening in Russia. You take it with a bit of skepticism. But we're all adults here, aren't we? Can't we have a free press and we vet what is true or not true? And yet they're going to demonize RT and everything that they have to say. I mean, occasionally CNN and Washington Post will stumble on the truth. They'll actually report the truth sometimes. I mean, you can be skeptical about them and you can understand what their bias is. And we all need to understand as consumers that every news agency has bias just looking at the stories that they think are important. That's a bias right there. Even if they pick a story and they tell you even handedly both sides of that story, the fact that they would pick one story and not another, that tells you where they're coming from. I mean, I have so many stories here that I can pick and choose from. And so the ones that I pick are the ones that I find to be interesting from my political perspective. And I'll tell you why I think it is interesting, and I'll try to expose the bias of other people as well. But you understand, and you should understand, that I have a bias. I'm not ashamed of it. I look at the news and I tell you what I think about that news. The people that you need to be afraid of are the ones who tell you that they don't have a bias. They're lying to you or they're fools. And so that's the basis on which we ought to do the freedom of the press here in America. But I find what's happened with RT to be setting a very dangerous precedent. And I'm sure that Lee is going to want to talk about that and other issues as well. He'll be joining us in the next segment. Before we get back to the news, I just want to remind you of some of the specials that we still have in place after our 34-hour broadcast celebrating the American birth and renaissance as expressed in the election of President Trump and the agenda that he represented. We've got a lot of products, some of our most popular products on 50% off sale along with free shipping. Let me give you a list of some of those. We've got Super Male Vitality, Super Female Vitality, both of those, 50% off and free shipping. We have Biome Defense, our probiotic formula. That is now 50% off with free shipping. All apparel, all T-shirts, caps, that sort of thing. All of that is now 50% off with free shipping. We have Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. That is a great way to take your baseline vitamins and minerals without having to swallow a lot of pills. Great tasting. And, of course, being a drink mix, you can make it taste like anything you want. That is now 50% off with free shipping, Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula. That's a great way to orally take something, vitamin B, that you would otherwise have to take as an injection. Same effect, but you don't have to get the shot. Just put it under your tongue, leave it there for like 15 seconds and swallow it. I take it every day. Secret 12, vitamin B12, 50% off with free shipping. And Super Blue fluoride-free mouthwash, 50% off with free shipping. And not only does it not have fluoride in it, our Super Blue also has silver in it. It's got nano silver, and it's got iodine, things that are going to fight bacteria in your mouth. So it's we put stuff in there that the other guys don't have, and we take out the bad stuff that they put in, like fluoride. Finally, we have DNA Force that's now back in stock, 25% off with free shipping. And that's a big discount. It's something that is difficult to make, and when we do it, just one ingredient in there cost $30,000 per batch. And so it's an expensive product. 25% off is going to save you a lot of money, and you can get it right now with free shipping. Take a look at the sales that we have as part of our American Rebirth and Renaissance, part of our 34-hour broadcast that concluded yesterday evening. That's still there. Free shipping on many products, and most of them 50% off. Let's take a quick look at the news here. We've got Monsanto in court again, and there's a lot of talk about not only glyphosate, as we're seeing massive accumulation in humans of glyphosate. We are now looking at a new threat. The herbicide, glyphosate, is Roundup and so forth as a brand name that Monsanto uses. As we see this accumulating in humans, now we've got them mixing it with some other herbicide called dicamba. And mixing it with dicamba creates something they call dicamba drift. And that means that it's going to spread. It's going to spread in the wind. And this article here puts it pretty succinctly in Zero Hedge. They say Monsanto is now in court again as a powerful new herbicide accidentally kills 3.6 million acres of crops. Think about this. This is nothing other than corporate greed, what we have based on here. Because what they want to do is they want to make sure they've got this pesticide, glyphosate, and it is such an intensive herbicide that you can't grow crops unless you buy their genetically modified crops that can withstand this poison. So they're poisoning the soil. And what we've seen happen in India, they would come in and say, hey, we got this great idea. We'll sell you some crops and we'll sell you an herbicide. The herbicide will get rid of all the weeds. And we have genetically modified our crops, our Monsanto crops, so that they won't be affected by this poison. And then they start charging them extremely expensive prices for the seed because you can't, they have the seed is patented, so these people can't make their own seed. They have to buy it again from Monsanto every year. And they started going into debt. And then they say, well, I want to get out of this merry-go-round. And guess what? They can't because now their soil is thoroughly poisoned. They can't grow anything else because of the glyphosates that are permeating the soil there. And you had a lot of farmers in India and elsewhere commit suicide because it is a hopeless situation. They poisoned the land. And now this is happening, being spread by the air. People who choose not to get on this merry-go-round, choose not to become the sharecroppers of Monsanto, are finding their crops and their land poisoned by this. And there's a lot of studies that are being conducted in Europe. They have identified it as a carcinogen. We should all be concerned that these herbicides are accumulating in humans. And I've said many kind things about the EPA under Scott Pruitt, and he's done a lot of good things in terms of energy. They need to start looking at Monsanto, and they need to start looking at glyphosate and dicamba. And they also, another troubling thing is what the EPA has done in terms of clearing mosquito mate, the release of weaponized mosquitoes in 20 U.S. states. I mean, what could possibly go wrong with that, right? I mean, we need to take a look at some of this stuff. As I said, I think that overall, Scott Pruitt has been putting restrictions and rules on the EPA to block their waters of the United States rules that were way, way overreached. And he knows that as an attorney general. He has seen how the EPA has overstepped its authority, overstepped the law. And he has brought them back on that, brought them back on attempts to shut down entire industries without regard to the individual issues of whether or not they could make these coal plants clean. No, that's not going to happen. We're just going to shut down entire industries. That was the approach of the EPA under Obama and others. So he's pulled that back, and good for him for doing that. I just have to look at these stories, though, about Monsanto and about the weaponized mosquitoes and say, don't make me come down there. I'm not happy with these. I'm not happy with these stories. Meanwhile, we have Donna Brazile saying, I hope to God we find out who murdered Seth Rich. Let's play just a little bit of what she said on a radio interview yesterday.
It seems obvious that there was coordination, that someone's doing oppo on you in response to your book. Who do you think that is?
You know, Tucker, I don't really have time to figure out who is spending, I'm sure, some much-needed money that needs to go to Democratic candidates next year to figure out what I said in this book is factually correct. I want to tell you, I wrote up front, I wanted to write this book to tell my story. I wanted the American people to see what happened. I became chair of the party for the second time in my life because our party was under attack. We were hacked. That's why I was called upon to step
okay
up.
We gotta go to break. I gotta say to you that if you think they were hacked, that didn't happen. William Binney, former global technical head of the NSA, said it was not possible. Even briefed CIA Director Pompeo on this. She's telling the truth about something. She's exposing Hillary and dumping her and distancing herself from that criminal, but she's still lying to us about the hack. Stay with us. Lee Stranahan is coming up. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to talk to Lee Stranahan now. And of course, Lee has thepopulist.us and citizenjournalismschool.com. He has worked in the past for both the Huffington Post and Breitbart. So he's been involved with both liberal and conservative media organizations. And Lee has stressed the idea that you can't just demonize an entire media organization. But that is what is happening right now with RT. So we want to talk to Lee about that, about Donna Brazile, and also about Judge Roy Moore, who is running for Senate. And we've had some amazing allegations of sexual misconduct with a minor that have come out in the last 24 hours. But Lee, let's start with Thank you for joining us. And let's start with the situation with RT being forced to register as a foreign agent by Monday, and then Russia retaliating and saying, well, we're going to have all of your press organizations register as foreign agents as well. Your comments on that?
Well, it's ridiculous, and it's part. First off, let's be clear on this. I work for Sputnik, which mm-hmm. is another. It's sort of a sister cousin organization, I guess, to RT, and we have not been required to register under FARA yet, but that could happen. The danger mm-hmm. in this, I think, first off, what does it actually practically mean? It doesn't actually mean that much, right?
Is it going to be, when you say what does it mean, are they going to then say to people who were journalists for RT, for example, does Max Kaiser then have to register as a foreign agent, or is he somehow tainted as a spy or lobbyist because he worked for RT?
See, that's what they're trying to do. The practical impact, you can be registered. For instance, I believe NHK, the Japanese network, I believe mm-hmm. the people there have to be registered as a foreign agent, okay? So what they want to do with this, though, and remember who's on RT right now, Larry King,
yeah,
Jesse Ventura,
yeah.
These are people who, Ed Schultz, who used to be on MSNBC, mm-hmm. okay? So mm-hmm. what they want to do is, this is part of a general smear campaign against Russia broadly. And by I don't like communism. And so the time to smear Russia would have been about 30 years ago. But I really don't remember these same people doing that much then, right? And so since Russia is now no longer communist, and also, by the way, no longer atheist, that's another big deal. And
That's a big part of their political landscape there is Eastern Orthodox Church. That's been part of the move. You know, you can't take away a belief system and not replace it with something else. And that's one of the first things the communists did, was to take away the Eastern Orthodox Church, which was the cultural foundation of that country. So now they have put that back in there as their foundation rather than Leninism.
And by the way, it's also part of what links Russia to, you know, I've talked before, I went to Lebanon in 2013, and I went to church over there, and it's Orthodox. And if you've never been to an Orthodox Sunday
church service.
Mm-hmm. It's different. You know, it's mm-hmm. very different. They're very serious about the religion over there, in a way that's just different than the way most people worship. It's different than the church I go to here in D.C. or the mega church I went to in Texas, right? And I'm not saying better or worse. I'm just saying different, right? And they're Christians as well, clearly. But the Orthodox Church, that's what they do in the Middle East, and that's why Russia has been on the correct side of the Syrian conflict, which is defending the Christians over there. This is very important to know. While people like Hillary Clinton and John McCain mm-hmm. were backing the Muslim terrorists who were not just killing Christians, but literally trying to wipe Christianity out. The reason they went after,
and we see that happening in the places that we have occupied in Afghanistan and Iraq. Right. After the U.S. occupation, they basically wiped out Christianity in those areas.
And literally what they're trying to do is, they don't like Christianity, the Sunni fundamentalist terrorist, ISIS now, right? But it was Ansar al-Sharia, al-Nusra, all of these groups, al-Shabaab, all of these groups, al-Qaeda. It's the same reason they don't like Shia Islam, right? It's the same reason they don't like Buddhism. They just want to wipe out everything that's not their interpretation of Islam. And
that's right. Everybody needs to understand that, just like they want to kill, you know, any infidel, which, as you point out, be Christians, it'd be Buddhists, Hindus, whatever. They also consider other Muslim sects to be infidels.
And Bashar al-Assad's an Alawite Muslim. He's a Shia Muslim. A lot of what's going on there is this Sunni-Shia conflict, frankly. And so this is part of demonizing Russia. If they can say, oh, we'll ignore Jesse Ventura, because he's a foreign agent. That's why they'll say it in every news story. Jack Weber, Larry King, who is required to file as a federal as a foreign agent under the FARA Act. That's what they'll say, right? That's why they want to do it. Because what they want to do is they want to discredit it. It's exactly the same thing that perhaps you've seen InfoWars subjected to for years now, right?
Oh, yeah. And what they're doing is, we just had this last week, we had a congressional hearing where the guy's talking to the executive from Twitter and saying, I saw an InfoWars story that was trending on this particular topic, and we were just quoting what somebody had tweeted out, and a mom who was criticizing de Blasio, who was running for mayor, and he says, we took that down. Well, why did it take you so long to take that down? And they have already admitted that when the information came out about the DNC leaks, that out of the 500,000 or so tweets on hashtag DNC leak, that they deleted 48% of those, made sure that those didn't go any further because they didn't want people looking at what was actually leaked. They wanted people distracted to look at the Russians, and Twitter cooperated with that. So, you know, the attacking of RT and forcing them to register, that's going to go to anybody that is considered to be an enemy of the establishment. We all know where this is headed.
That's exactly right. And again, not just saying this because I'm on, to your credit and to InfoWars credit, you guys have been talking about this. I have former colleagues of mine at Breitbart that are like, well, we can't talk to you because you work for Sputnik.
Really?
They would never have me on the air. They would never have me on the air. Not in a million years. And the problem, David, as you know, is if you give in to that fear, they win, right?
Yes. Yeah.
They might as well have censored it. It's not because of me. It's not because of a view I've said. It's not because of an opinion that I have that's controversial or a fact I got wrong. They want to smear the entire outlet. And that's why whenever I see people say, well, I don't listen to the New York Times, or I don't listen to CNN, or I'm always like, stop doing that. You're giving into exactly the same fallacy that is used against us.
Exactly. To have blinders on and to say, I rule out everything from that particular source. I mean, we fight against that all the time. People go, oh, that's InfoWars. I don't ever listen to InfoWars. Well, you should. And you should question what we say, and you should question whoever it is that you're listening to and see who's right on individual issues. I'm David Knight. We're talking to Lee Stranahan. We're going to be right back. Stay with us.
Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We're talking to Lee Stranahan. Of course, he runs citizenjournalismschool.com and The Populist. He also writes there. He's also a contributor at Sputnik. And as we see the demonization of individual media outlets, RT, InfoWars, and others, it's a very troubling thing to see happening here, because we want to see an open, free, competitive market. And of course, Lee has written for the liberal Huffington Post, the conservative Breitbart News in the past. He has many times made the argument, listen to this story. Use your mind. Examine the facts here. Don't just believe this because this outlet over here says it, or disbelieve it because it is said by a different outlet. We always need to be examining what is actually being said. And with that in mind, Lee, let's talk a little bit about what's going on now with Roy Moore, who is the Senate candidate, Republican candidate in Alabama to take Jeff Sessions' place. The story that came out of Washington Post, you know, as we're talking about different outlets and whether or not they're credible or not, as I said earlier, I think we have a reasonable question to examine the Washington Post's motives as well as their truthfulness. I mean, they have endorsed the other candidate. They pushed a fake financial scandal. There was nothing to it in just the last couple of weeks. And now they have one individual that they allege a crime to, but they have three other individuals, which to me, it doesn't look like it rises to the level of a crime. I don't know. What do you think about these allegations here?
Well, I think, first off, I've covered the first story I covered as a reporter about 10 years ago was the John Edwards story. And that's when I was writing for the Huffington Post. I was a Democrat at that time. And I was the guy who looked at the charges and said, this seems credible. At that time, Edwards was caught coming out of a hotel room at 3 a.m. He hid in the bathroom from reporters. That activity seems suspicious to me.
Yeah.
The logical fallacy to do here is to actually look at the motives of the Washington Post or to look at their truthfulness. You have to look at the claims themselves. These claims are specific and detailed against Roy Moore. I agree with you that the other claims bolster the idea that he may have been interested in young women at that time in his life. But the specific claims by the 14-year-old, then 14-year-old girl, seem to me to be detailed. And they also, I have to say this, if you're going to do a smear campaign on something that's going to be difficult to prove either way, when there's no, that it's past the statute of limitations, right?
Right. And that's one of the problems. And we've talked about this in the past. The statute of limitations that they have on pedophilia is extremely short. In many cases, it's like 3 years. So they might go 3 years or so past the point the person turns 18. That's a problem. But one of the reasons they say on the other side, one of the reasons that they do that is because it is so difficult to prove anything if people wait a very long time. And here this is a situation. This is a 40-year-old charge. He's run for office 4 times for public office, and nothing has come up until the Washington Post put this together.
And by the way, that also doesn't make any difference to me either. To me, that's another argument that you need to leave aside. Because I will tell you, in the case of John Edwards, for instance, there were other women and there were other accusations. And I found this out in the course of reporting that story. And by the way, those have never come out. The staffer who he was caught with, someone walked in on John Edwards and a staffer. Have you ever heard about that?
No.
Right. And so what I'm saying is, if that were to come out now, it just did. But I mean, I've talked about it before. People could say, well, gee, why didn't that come up? And the answer is because it didn't, because it don't get reported. In a state like Alabama, there's reasons, you know, this wasn't a national story before. There's a zillion reasons. But I think here's the issue, and this is the big issue to me. Roy Moore needs to do something more. And by the way, let me also explain how this is different than the Trump accusations. When I looked at the accusations against Trump, I took them seriously, too, by which I mean I looked at them and I didn't weigh the accuser's motives. I looked at the accusations. So there's a woman who said she was in the first class section with Donald Trump, and for 20 minutes he was feeling her breast. Now, I ran that by my wife. I said, if somebody was sitting next to you in first class, how many minutes could they feel you?
Yeah.
And it was a very small number. It was seconds. By the way, try this simple test at home. And and so to me, those weren't credible allegations. Does that make sense to me?
Yes. And I think that one of the things that's at play here is that we look at what just happened with financial scandal that turned out to be a lie from Washington Post. But when you look at the current climate, we have so many people now coming out accusing famous people of sexual misconduct.
Right.
That instantly makes this believable in a way that in the past people would be looking at this and say, well, let's talk a little bit more about this. But it immediately makes that credible. And yet, you know, when we look at the cases of the other people, and we look at the case of the lady that he eventually married and has been married to for decades, to me, that spoke against that. You know, you're talking about believability. You know, is it believable that he's going to be fondling somebody for that amount of time before this happens? Or you look at the situation from the dirty dossier. Everybody that knew Trump said that he was germophobic. And it's like, would he want to have something like that? That was absolutely unbelievable to anybody who knew him. And so when you look at Judge Roy Moore and you say, well, here's a guy who was you know, interested in women who were coming of age. It's a courting process. And you look at what these other women said, that he did it openly, that he dated them openly, that he got together with them and, you know, played guitar, read poetry, talked or whatever. One of them said he kissed me. When you look at their testimony about that, even though one of them says, well, I think that age difference makes it creepy now at this point in time. Even when you look at that, that shows us a pattern of behavior that is more consistent with the life that he has led over these last 40 years. And so this one accusation from this one person seems to be an outlier to me. I don't know. Well, I mean, it's he said, she said.
Well, here's what it is. He said, she said, but this is why the specificity is important. And this is why, and by the way, everything you're bringing up is why this is important. When I was a Democrat, here's what I said about Edwards. I said, if the allegation is true, he needs to admit to it so everybody can move on. Because here's what happens. Mm-hmm. You have people who are defending Roy Moore right now. Breitbart, for instance, Bannon is all over it. He's putting his reputation on the line. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The danger here is if Roy Moore is lying right now,
mm-hmm.
if this actually happened.
And it takes on a lot more people, yeah.
And he's eventually going to have to admit it, right. And the other thing is, and I say this especially since, and I say this as a Christian, let's leave political strategy aside. What's the moral thing to do? Mm-hmm. If he did this, the moral thing to do is to admit it, take responsibility. I don't even think he, by the way, I don't even think he needs to step aside. He could. I think he needs to would need to pray on that. But mm-hmm. it's conceivable to me that Roy Moore could say, and I'm not saying he did it, I'm saying it's a credible allegation that needs to be taken seriously. But I believe that if he said, this was 40 years ago, I regret it, I repented, I prayed on this, I'm gonna leave it up to the voters to decide whether that is who I am now or whether that's the way I've conducted my life. But I want to be upfront and clear about it. This happened, and I apologize to the woman who it happened to, right? I think said that, I still think he could actually prevail. But I'm not saying it as a point of strategy.
Sure, I understand. You're saying it from a Christian perspective. We're going to continue with this. We've got to take a quick break. We're talking to Lee Stranahan. Of course, you can find him at citizenjournalismschool.com. He'll teach you how to think objectively and to do real journalism, also at thepopulist.us. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Lee Stranahan. We've been talking in the last segment about Judge Roy Moore, who's running for Senate in Alabama, the accusations that came out in the last 24 hours. How do we look at this? What can we take away from these claims? And we're going to get back to that briefly. Then I want to go on to Donna Brazil and get the take of Lee as to these revelations coming out with her book, Hacked, that she's been plugging. Before we go back to Lee, I want to plug some of the products that we sell here at InfoWars, because that's how we fund this operation, this program, and everything that we do here. We just had a 34-hour broadcast celebrating America's rebirth and renaissance with the victory of the Trump movement a year ago. And as part of that, we took a lot of our most popular products and put them on 50% discount with free shipping. Here are some of those products: Super Male and Super Female Vitality. Both of those, 50% off with free shipping. Biome Defense, our probiotic, as well as all apparel, all shirts, all caps, everything that we've got, all apparel and Biome Defense, 50% off with free shipping. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, a great way to take your vitamins and minerals without swallowing a lot of pills. That's 50% off with free shipping. Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, 50% off with free shipping, and many more you'll find at InfoWarsStore.com. Let's go back to Lee. You know, before we leave the situation here with Judge Roy Moore, and I understand what you're saying here, and as a Christian, I absolutely agree with you. If there's something here, he needs to confess it and then, you know, deal with it, put it out in the open. You know, I think about what Saul Alinsky would write in his Rules for Radicals. Make them play by their rules. And, of course, the radicals don't have any rules. But we do have rules. And so if there is something here, he should admit it. And you know, when I look at, when I say they don't have any rules, and I, this is why I think, you know, when we look at accusers and we look at, you know, this lady, and one of the ways that we're going to have to evaluate this, I think, is not just the specificity of things, but also the way, kind of going back to Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas, right? People were looking at, well, who am I going to believe in this? He said, she said type of thing. But also I think we have to understand that The Washington Post is really kind of a co-accuser here, the way that they set this up. And as I said, when I looked at it and I looked at the specifics of it, and they started getting specific about these other young women, knowing that Judge Roy Moore married somebody that was about 24, 25 years younger than him and eventually did that. And knowing that if he's coming from a Christian perspective, that dating doesn't necessarily mean sex, so that he could, as they pointed out in their article, get together with somebody, try to figure out who they are, where they're coming from, is whether or not they're going to be a prospective wife when they come of age. So looking at all of that kind of stuff, and then looking at the way, for example, the Washington Post, you look at Macron and his wife, there's about the same difference. She's older. They totally overlooked the idea that she was a pedophile teacher. She was married, had three children. She's 40 years old, and she starts having a sexual relationship with this guy who's now the president of France. They never talk about that. As a matter of fact, they swept that under the carpet, and then when President Trump goes to France, they say, he said to her, you're looking, you're in great shape. And they were outraged by that. They were not outraged by her being a pedophile. So when I look at this, I can't, in this particular instance, separate the accusations from the sources of these charges from the Washington Post. Your comment.
Well, logically, you have to separate it, only in the sense that you have to look at the claims based on. So for instance, the way to attack this factually would be if Moore could see, because there is a degree of specificity, for instance, about when they met, okay? So if Moore could prove he was not living in the country at that time, let's say, that's a slam. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Right, right.
There's a date, right? So when I looked at it, I can separate that out. Now, that being said, the way I handle something like the Macron thing is I, as a broadcaster and a journalist, I do what you did. I talk about it, right? So I make sure I bring up the way I handle double standards is A, I don't keep them. Mm-hmm. And B, when the mainstream media has one, I go, well, you have a double standard now. But to me, that moral high ground, you lose it when you don't, when you do the same thing. When you have a double standard yourself, you have the same thing. And here's what I'm saying. Watch the next few days to see what Moore says. Mm-hmm. What I want to see, as somebody who supports him, I support Roy Moore. I want to see him answer factually. There are arguments that are factual that can be made. I dealt with this in the Anthony Weiner story. Listen to what they say. And I think it's really important, because I said this on Edwards, I said this on Weiner. You do your supporters a huge disservice. The worst thing you can do, in my opinion, is attack the accuser when you know that they're telling the truth. That's the worst thing you can do. The second thing you can do is stretch it out so you have people supporting you, because it makes people cynical about politics in general. It makes people feel like I can't trust anybody. I'm willing to give Moore a day or two to get his act together, I never take somebody's.
Well, I understand, but I think when we look at this, even though she was specific about where they met and so forth, that doesn't necessarily mean that these other events happened. And it seems to me like in a situation like this, we still have the principle of innocent until proven guilty. And sure. The burden of proof, and this is why there is a statute of limitations on pedophilia, because the burden of proof is on the accuser. And usually the accuser comes back so many years later. In this particular case, 40 years later, how do you prove the charges against somebody? And what do we do when somebody is accused of something? We immediately say, well, you're guilty unless you can prove that you're innocent. I mean, we've got John McCain saying, well, the level of these accusations is so heinous, he should just step aside. And it's like, well, wait a minute, these are still allegations, they're not proven, and he's still innocent until proven guilty.
I don't agree with McCain at all. I don't agree with anybody who's saying it. The way I do it is, I do. You know, here's what you do. You do it when you got a conflict between your kids, right? Where one person says this, the other person says that. You weigh both sides. So what I'm saying is, I've read Moore's denials. They don't do it for me yet.
Right. There's no specificity in his denials. He's saying essentially, and so, hey, this is 40 years old and I've run for office four times and so forth.
That's right. And specifically, she said he took her to his house. Let me just stop right there. If he took her to his house, I believe everything else she says, correct? Mm-hmm. Because why would a 32-year-old man take a 14-year-old girl to his house in this case? So that's to me where I start to look at it. Now, what I would love to happen is my ex-colleagues at Breitbart to go, we're going to look into these accusations and do good reporting, and we're going to follow the facts where they'll lead us. I'm afraid they're not going to do that. Because
in other words, could she be specific about what she saw in the house? Like we had in the case of Michael Aquino, who was the confessed satanic guy. And it was a pastor who was on the military base of Presidio. And the little boy explained some unusual, recalled some unusual things about that house. And it's like, oh, he's been in there. And that means that these accusations he's saying carry some weight. We're almost out of time. We've got a couple of minutes left. Let's talk about Donna Brazile. I mean, she's come out pretty hard against Hillary Clinton. I still don't believe some of the things she's saying in terms of the very title of her book is hacked. I have my I seriously don't believe that they were hacked. As a matter of fact, we had two leaks that came out of the DNC internally just within the last week, one of them supporting her. But what are your comments on Donna Brazile?
Well, this is another one of those cases. I got her book as soon as it came out because I wanted to see what she said. She says a lot of stuff that's factually not true in the book. Then she says other things. Let's talk about the joint fundraising agreement, okay? I believe her because I've seen the joint fundraising agreement. I've seen the email.
Yeah, they got leaked.
Right. I don't have to take her word for it. I've seen it. And it says that Hillary Clinton gets and her campaign got to pick the communications director. I should point out, by the way, that the reason that's significant for anybody who's seen me on your show before, I talk a lot about the Ukraine DNC election interference.
Yes.
Alexandra Chalupa, who's the DNC operative, when she reported in about what she'd been up to, she sent the email to the communications director who was handpicked by Hillary Clinton's campaign. Does that make sense? Tie what we know now into what we knew before. It's very disturbing. Now, where Donna Brazile makes completely false statements is when she talks. She literally says in the book, I don't know how technical you are, David, but she says in the book that you can be hacked by someone leaving a voicemail.
Well, we ran out of time, and this is the end of the show, but Lee, we're going to have to get you on next week and talk about Donna Brazile, because there is a lot to talk about in that particular case. Thank you so much for joining us. Lee Stranahan, you can find him at citizenjournalismschool.com, also thepopulist.us. It's always a pleasure talking to you, Lee. Thanks. That's it for our show today. I'm David Knight. Thank you for joining us.